Elagos has been spouting that sort of stuff ever since we left Coruscant, Gent said with a weak attempt at a grin. I guess some of this nobleness stuff must have rubbed off on me. Unsteadily, he got to his feet. This is the right path, and I'm ready. When do we leave?
At once, Pelion said, sliding around the end of the table and standing up. I'll put together a letter of introduction for General Hestiv, and detail one of my most trusted pilots to fly you to Yaga Minor.
His eyes flicked across Gent's outfit.
I think we'll also put you in an Imperial uniform. Disra may have informers on Yaga Minor, and there's no point in drawing unnecessary attention by bringing an obvious civilian onto a military base.
You won't be taking him there yourself in the Chimera? Leia asked.
Pelion shook his head.
Once you and I have finished our discussions, I'll be heading directly to Bastion. There are some rather pointed questions Moff Disra owes me answers for.
Leia swallowed.
I see.
With your permission, then, I'll go arrange for Crypt Chief Gent's transport.
Pelion smiled faintly at Gent.
I mean, Imperial Lieutenant Gent's transport. Come with me, Lieutenant.
Stepping past Sokasak, he headed for the Falcon's exit.
Sure,
Gent said, starting after him.
So long, Elagos. You too, Counselor.
Go in wisdom and courage, Elagos said gravely.
May the Force be with you, Leia added. And thank you.
Captain Ardiff was waiting in the aft bridge when Pelion emerged from the turbolift.
The Millennium Falcon has cleared the sentry perimeter and jumped to light speed, he reported.
Good,
Pelion said, looking past him to the viewport. In the distance, he could see the faint flickers of reflected sunlight from the solar panels of the TIE fighter escort as they headed back to the Chimera.
And Lieutenant Mavron?
He and his passengers left half an hour ago.
Ardiff lifted his eyebrows slightly.
May I ask...
How the talks went?
Pelion shrugged.
As well as preliminary talks ever go, I suppose. Organa Solo isn't about to commit the New Republic to a course of action based on my word alone, and I made it similarly clear that I can't accept her word as guaranteeing Coruscant's future actions. So there's a great deal of careful verbal dancing yet to be done.
But she's willing to talk.
She's very willing to talk.
Pelion hesitated.
At least about most things.
Ardiff frowned.
What do you mean?
Pelion gazed out at the stars again.
There's something she wasn't telling me, he said. Something important, that much I'm sure of. But what exactly it was?
He shook his head.
I don't know.
Private information having to do with the Bothans, perhaps? Ardiff suggested. Or something more personal.
She's been in political trouble on Coruscant before. Could it be that she's about to lose her influence there entirely?
I hope not,
Pelion said.
Political problems between her and Coruscant would make this process far more difficult than it already is. They might reject any proposal simply because she was involved with it.
Or might support it because she was involved, Ardiff pointed out. The polarization we're already seeing over the Kaamas issue could easily bleed over into something like this.
That's one of my biggest concerns,
Pelion agreed grimly.
That peace will be rejected by some for no better reason than that their political enemies are for it.
He stepped past Ardiff onto the command walkway.
But all of us have only the cards the universe has dealt us, he said. If Organa Solo refuses to show us some of her cards, we'll just have to play the game that way. And in the meantime,
he added,
we have other matters to attend to. Set course for Bastion, Captain. It's time Moff Disra and I had a long, serious talk.
In front of the Falcon, the stars flared into star lines, and Leia slumped a little in her seat.
"Do you think he really meant it?"
she asked, turning to look at Elagos.
Elagos gave one of his full-body Ka'amasi shrugs.
"I believe Admiral Pelion himself is sincere," he said. "As I presume you know with more certainty than I do, I suspect the question you really wish to ask is whether his sincerity can be trusted."
"I don't know," she said. "You're right. I don't sense any duplicity in Pelion himself. But with Thrawn back on the scene..."
She shook her head.
"Nothing was ever the way it seemed with him, Elagos. He could maneuver you into doing exactly what he wanted you to do, despite the fact that you knew he was trying to do it. Thrawn may be using this peace initiative of Pelion's for some other end entirely."
"Is that why you didn't tell him that Captain Solo was on Bastion?"
Elagos asked.
Leia started. "How did you know about that?"
she demanded.
"I didn't tell you Han had gone there."
Elagos shrugged again.
"You've dropped hints," he said. "As have Danogri. It hasn't been difficult to put the pieces together."
His blue-on-green eyes bored into her face.
"Why didn't you tell Admiral Pelion that?"
Leia turned away from that gaze, pretending to study the Falcon's engine monitor.
"We know that the Imperials are encouraging at least some of the violence that's been occurring in the New Republic," she said,
fighting through the sudden dryness in her throat.
"That riot on Bothawee, for one. My Nogri guard found evidence that the shots that started it came from a rare Imperial sniper weapon."
"Interesting,"
Elagos murmured.
"You didn't tell Pelion about that, either."
"The problem is we have no real proof of any of it,"
Leia said, shaking her head tiredly.
"And even if we did, fighting Thrawn is like fighting a shadow, Elagos. He's never where you think he is, doing what you expect him to do. Everything he does is circles within circles within circles."
"Yet you cannot allow uncertainty to paralyze you,"
Elagos pointed out.
"That path allows him to win by default. At some point, right or wrong, you must take action."
His eyes seemed to bore into hers.
"You must decide who you can trust."
Leia blinked back sudden tears.
"I can't trust Pelion,"
she said bluntly.
"Not yet. If Thrawn is orchestrating this whole operation, Han would be a terribly useful hostage or bargaining chip for him. I couldn't take that chance he'd find out from Pelion that Han was there."
"Yet you trusted him enough to allow him to take Ghent into a situation of potentially equal danger,"
Elagos pointed out.
"Ghent wanted to go,"
she said, knowing even as she spoke that such an argument was dangerously slippery ground.
"Besides, he wouldn't be of any use to Thrawn."
"You know better than that, Counselor,"
Elagos said, the soft reproach in his voice a painful jab in Leia's heart.
"Ghent is highly knowledgeable about New Republic encrypt and decrypt techniques. In a war situation, such knowledge would be of immense value to the Empire."
"We've already been over this,"
Leia reminded him, the first stirrings of anger coloring the guilt rumbling within her. Who was this Ka'amasi to tell her what was right or not right for her to do?
"There's no way for us to avoid taking risks here."
"I agree,"
Elagos said.
"And I don't suggest that your decisions were necessarily wrong."
Leia frowned, the growing anger turning to suspicious uncertainty.
"What are you suggesting then?"
she demanded.
"That you're worried you used your power and authority to protect your husband more than you did a relative stranger,"
Elagos said.
"That you're worried you've betrayed the trust that is yours as a High Counselor, a diplomat, and a Jedi."
"She does not need to answer to you, Trustant Akla,"
a harsh Nogri voice came from behind them. Leia turned her head to see Sokka Sak standing in the open cockpit door.
trouble? She asked him.
No trouble,
the Nogri assured her, stepping forward and taking up a position just behind her.
I came to report that no one is in pursuit, and that Barkimt is shutting down the weapon systems.
He turned his dark eyes on Elagos.
If she chooses to protect her clan from danger, that is no concern of yours.
I agree, Elagos said calmly. As I've already said, I'm not here to pass judgments.
Then why do you press her about it?
Sakasak demanded.
Because, as I also said, she herself is not convinced she did right,
Elagos said, turning his gaze back to Leia.
It's important that she think this matter through and come to a conclusion one way or another. Either to accept her decisions as right and continue on, or to acknowledge them as wrong and also continue on.
Why must she do this?
Sakasak asked. The Kaamasi smiled sadly.
Because she is a High Counselor and a diplomat and a Jedi. Only when she is at peace with herself will she have the insight and wisdom we will all need to rely on in the days ahead.
For a long moment, none of them spoke. Leia stared out at the mottled sky of hyperspace rushing past, the acrid bite of shame adding to the rest of the emotions swirling within her. Once again, Elagos was right.
You should have been a Jedi, Elagos,
she said with a sigh, as she unstrapped from her seat and stood up.
I do not have a Jedi's ability to touch the Force, Elagos said,
an odd note of regret in his voice.
And yet you speak more truly than perhaps you know. It is a legend among my people that at the very dawn of their age, the first of the Jedi Knights came to Kaamas to learn from us the moral use of their power.
I don't doubt the legend is true,
Leia said, gesturing to the seat she'd just vacated.
Sakasak, if you'd take control here, I'll be in the cargo hold. I have some serious thinking and meditating to do.
Chapter 20.
Good day, citizen scholars of the Machala Order of the Empire.
The ancient SE-2 service droid behind the reception desk wheezed its usual greeting.
How may I and the Imperial Library serve you this morning?
Just assign us a computer station,
Han said, putting a firm restraining bolt on his already grouchy mood. Already it was shaping up to be a hot, muggy day, and he felt both uncomfortable and stupid parading around the city streets in the traditional M'Challa scholar's robe he and the others had been wearing ever since landing here on Bastion. The last thing he wanted to do was waste time trading banter with an SE-2 droid.
We can handle our own data search, thanks.
Certainly,
the droid peered at him, then at Lando, then at Lobot. His gaze lingered on the latter, as if wondering why he was wearing his hood so close about his head on such a warm day.
You citizens have been in here before. Each of the past 3 days, if my memory has not degraded.
We're doing a long-term study, Lando stepped in smoothly. It takes a great deal of time.
Would you like assistance?
The droid asked helpfully.
We have several research droids and interface counterparts available for hire at a purely nominal fee.
We're doing fine,
Han told him, striving mightily to keep from shouting in the droid's metal face.
Just assign us a station, all right?
Certainly, citizen scholar. Station 47A. Go through the double doors to your left.
We know where it is,
Han said, turning on his heel and stalking toward the indicated doors.
And thank you, Lando added.
He and Lobot caught up with Han just inside the double doors.
You think you can draw a little more attention to us?
Lando growled as Han headed off through the maze of individual and group booths that filled the huge room, only a handful of which were currently occupied.
Maybe you should try kicking the droid back and forth across the disc a few times. That ought to do it.
A lot of Imperials don't like droids, Han growled back. Even scholars. Let's just get on with it, okay?
Lando didn't answer, and Han felt a twinge of guilt for snapping at his friend that way. After all, Lando was doing him a big favor by even being here in the first place. But his mood was already too sour for the guilt to make much headway against it. 3 days of soft-footing around the Imperial capital city, having to put up with smarmy Imperials, overcharging TapCaf owners, and idiot SE-2 droids were starting to get to him. Especially considering how much progress they'd made so far in getting into the special files section. Namely, none. They reached Station 47A, and Han snagged a third chair from an unused booth to supplement the two already there.
All right,
Lando said, activating the booth's privacy field as he sat Lobot down in front of the keyboard and then took the chair beside him.
You have a good contact with Mogid?
Lobot's answer was to place his fingers on the keyboard. For a moment, nothing happened. Then, slowly, he began tapping the keys. Hitching his chair up behind Lando, stifling a sarcastic remark that wouldn't have done anyone any good and was probably uncalled for anyway, Han sat down and tried to settle in. Maybe this time they'd get lucky. The ship had been quiet for nearly an hour before Karoli decided that, once again, she had guessed wrong. It was aggravating. No, actually, it was infuriating. To have come all this way with Solo and Calrissian, to have spent days buried alive in this cramped smuggling compartment beneath the elegant living section of Calrissian's yacht, and then to not even find Card and Shada waiting at the end of the ride was maddening. She took a deep breath in the darkness, ordering herself sternly to settle down. Maybe Card and Shada had simply been delayed, and were still on their way. She would just have to be patient and wait them out. In the meantime, there was clearly nothing to be gained by hanging around in this hole, feeling sorry for herself. Reaching above her, she worked the catch that popped the hidden access panel, and eased it carefully to one side. For a moment, she remained motionless in a half-crouch, listening for any indication that she might have been heard. Then she eased up and out into the corridor, breathing deeply as she flushed the stale air of the compartment out of her lungs. No one was visible. Not that that was surprising, really. Solo, Calrissian, and that biocomp-wired cyborg they called Lobot had all gone off together that morning, leaving the Verpine presumably in his usual place in the aft control room. That had been the procedure every day since they'd landed here, and there had been nothing in the snatches of conversation she'd overheard that might indicate the routine had been changed. Briefly, she considered sneaking aft to again try to figure out what the Verpine was doing, but decided against it. Her last two efforts in that direction had failed to discover anything useful, and she couldn't see wasting any more time on it. Which left her with the question of what exactly she should be wasting her time doing. There weren't all that many options, actually. For the past 3 days, she'd followed Solo and the others to what the SE-2 on desk duty had identified as an Imperial library. The first 2 days, she'd sneaked in behind them to watch. Yesterday, tired of staring through a privacy field, watching them punch computer keys all day, she'd left them inside and scouted around the building and neighborhood. Now, having sneaked back aboard the ship last night, she had tested the theory that Shada might actually be meeting with the Verpine while Solo and the others were out. But that one had fallen through, too. And as far as Karoli could see, she was out of options. For all the evidence to date, Shada might not be coming here at all. And that was an immensely irritating thought. It would mean she had completely misinterpreted that conversation she eavesdropped between Solo and Calrissian, and had come out here on a total wild treasure hunt. Whatever here actually was, it was Imperial space. That much had been obvious from the all-human populace, even before she'd spotted her first Imperial security uniform. But where in the Empire it actually was, she didn't know. Not that it mattered all that much, except for the fact that if Solo and Calrissian managed to give her the slip, it might mean trouble getting back home. Unlikely, though. From the way they'd been talking this morning, whatever their objective was, they were still a long way from achieving it. Still, Card had been mentioned in that conversation, so maybe he was just being cagey. Another quick scout around the library's neighborhood, she decided, then tag Solo again when they took their usual early afternoon meal break. And maybe this time they would actually say something worth listening to. Easing down the corridor, alert for any sounds, she headed for the hatchway.
"Another report from your new empire, Your Excellency,"
Tyr said, laying a pair of data cards on Deetra's desk.
"The Raurian governments have forwarded a copy of the fully executed treaty between their systems and the Empire."
"Systems?" Deetra asked, picking up the data card and frowning at it. "I thought our treaty was only with their home system."
"It was," Tyr said smugly. "Apparently our little demonstration against those Diamolan marauders convinced three of their independent colonies that they wanted to be on the winning side, too."
"Did it now?" Deetra said, looking at the data card with new interest.
The Raurian independent colonies were joint efforts with a half-dozen other species.
"Did the other co-owners of those worlds agree?"
"Apparently so," Tyr said. "The treaties speak of the colony systems in their entireties, with no mention of specific regions or districts."
He smiled.
"Of course, the Raurians are quite good at persuasion."
"They're not the only ones," Deetra said, looking across the room to where Flim was hunched over in a chair, staring moodily out a window. "Congratulations, Admiral. You've picked up three more systems."
Flim didn't answer, and Deetra felt his lip twist with contempt. Apparently the con man was still sulking.
"Don't worry,"
Tyr said, following Deetra's glare.
"He'll get over it soon enough."
"Or else he'll find himself impaled on a sharp pole somewhere out in unknown space,"
Flim growled without turning around.
"Right next to the two of you."
Deetra looked up at Tyr.
"What's his problem?"
"Nothing serious,"
Tyr said, dismissing the con man with a wave of his hand.
"He's worried about that alien ship, that's all."
"Ah,"
Deetra said, smiling tightly. "Yes, the mysterious alien ship, which that sleeper cell pilot had spotted and made a recording of off Pakrik Minor.
What's the status on that, anyway?"
"The analyst should be finished any time,"
Tyr assured him.
"I have a feeling this may be it, Your Excellency."
Deetra felt a shiver ripple up his back.
"You really think that was the hand of Thrawn in that ship?"
"You saw the design,"
Tyr pointed out.
"Part TIE fighter, part something else. Yes, I think that's the hand, or else his agent, or else someone from Captain Park. Whichever, I think we may finally have lured our target into the open."
Flim made a rumbling noise in the back of his throat.
"Ugh, like you might lure out a Death Star," he muttered.
"You're overdoing the melodrama just a bit, Admiral,"
Tyr said, his patience starting to sound a little strained.
"Whoever they are, there are a dozen ways we can keep them from getting close enough to figure out you're a fraud."
"And what if they want to say hello?" Flim countered. "What are you going to say then? That I've got laryngitis? That I just stepped out for a week?"
"Hold it, both of you,"
Deetra cut them off as the comm light on his desk began to blink.
"This may be it."
He keyed the comm.
Moff Deesra, he said.
The man on the display was middle-aged, with the slightly nearsighted look of someone who has spent long years staring at a computer display.
Colonel Uday, Your Excellency, Imperial Intelligence Analysis, I have the final report on that record you sent me.
Excellent, Deesra said. Send it immediately.
Yes, sir,
Uday said, glancing down and working keys off camera. Another light on Deesra's display winked on and then off again, marking the transfer.
I'm afraid there wasn't much we could get on the ship itself. But what there was is in there.
Thank you, Deesra said, trying not to sound too impatient.
The sooner he could cut off this garrulous fool, the sooner he and Tears could start going over the report line by line.
You'll be receiving a commendation for your quick work.
2 points first, if I may, Your Excellency,
Uday said, holding up 2 fingers.
I'm sure it's all in your report, Deesra said, reaching for the off switch. Thank you.
According to the note that accompanied the file, the sighting was made by a TIE fighter off Pakrik Minor. That turns out not to be the case.
Deesra froze, finger poised over the switch.
Explain.
The file is actually a compilation of 2 separate sightings. One was made in the Kowron system, we think. The other either in the Noskin or Drumpani systems. Neither was made by a TIE fighter either.
Deesra threw a hard look at Tears. The Royal Guardsman's face had turned to stone.
How do you know? He demanded.
That they didn't come from TIE fighters? The sensor profiles are all wrong. I'd guess an X-Wing or A-Wing for the first one, some kind of well-equipped warship for the second. Not a New Republic ship. The verification signature is wrong for that.
The Colonel shrugged.
As to where they were made, that's easily pulled from the background star patterns.
Deesra took a careful breath.
Thank you, Colonel, he said. You've been most helpful. As I said, a commendation will be forthcoming.
Thank you, Your Excellency.
Deesra stabbed the comm switch, and the Colonel's face vanished.
Well, the Moff said, looking at Tears again. It seems we've been lied to.
It does indeed,
Tears said, his voice soft, his expression gone suddenly deadly.
I think, Your Excellency, that we have been betrayed.
Deesra swore viciously.
That Criffing clone! We should never have trusted them. Thrawn should never have started this Criffing project in the first place.
Calm down,
Tears said, his tone suddenly sharp.
Thrawn knew what he was doing. And don't forget that a good many of those clones died fighting for the Empire.
They're still an abomination,
Deesra snarled. He'd spoken with clones, had ordered them into battle, had even sold them to the Kavriluk pirates in exchange for Zothib's precious Preybird starfighters.
They still made his skin crawl.
And you can't trust any of them.
Can we get off Carib Devist and clone treachery for a minute?
Flynn put in tautly.
Seems to me the question ought to be why he sent us a faked record in the first place. What did he have to gain?
Tears took a deep breath, clearly forcing calmness into himself.
That is indeed the question. Deesra, how did the record come in?
Aboard a drone probe from the Ubiquitrate contact station at Parshoon,
Deesra told him.
Sent by the agent in charge.
Sent directly here.
Tears cut him off.
No handoffs or course changes.
No,
Deesra said, one hand curling into a fist as it suddenly and belatedly struck him.
They wanted Bastion's location.
And they got it,
Tears said darkly,
his comlink already in his hand.
Major Tierce to Capital Security. Full background alert. Possible spies in the city. Locate and put under surveillance. Do not, repeat, do not detain at present. Confirmation from Moff Deesra will be forthcoming.
He got an acknowledgement and keyed off.
You need to send them a confirmation, Your Excellency,
he said. I know, Deesra said, frowning at him. Excuse me if I seem unusually dense today, but you don't want them detained? Spies or saboteurs in my city, and you don't want them detained?
I don't think they're saboteurs,
Tierce said.
After all, they've been here at least a couple of days and nothing has blown up.
Oh, that's comforting, Deesra said icily. Why don't you want them detained?
As Thrawn often said, within every problem lies an opportunity.
Tyr shifted his gaze to the side.
It occurs to me, we have an extremely interesting opportunity here.
Frowning, Deesra followed his gaze.
You'd better not be thinking what I think you're thinking,
Flynn warned, his eyes flicking uneasily back and forth between Tierce and Deesra.
Of course we are,
Tierce assured him.
A rebel spy team being confronted personally by Grand Admiral Thrawn? It would be the perfect cap to your performance.
The perfect slab under my funeral pyre, you mean?
Flynn shot back.
Are you crazy, Tierce? They get one glimpse of me, and you're going to have a martyred Grand Admiral on your hands.
Which might not be such a bad idea, Deesra growled, keying confirmation of Tierce's security alert into his board. Tierce is right. This is a perfect chance to demonstrate your omniscience.
I can hardly wait,
Flynn said sourly, crossing his arms.
Calm down, Admiral,
Tierce said, nudging Deesra aside and keying the display for a search grid overview.
We'll have them spotted in 15 minutes, and the whole thing will be over in 30.
There was a beep from the display.
Your Excellency!
Muttering a curse, Deesra keyed the comm switch. Yes, what is it? A young, earnest-looking man appeared on the display.
Major Kerf, Your Excellency, Spaceport Control.
He identified himself.
I thought you'd like to know that his shuttle has just landed.
Deesra shot a look over the display at Tierce, got a shrug in response.
Whose shuttle has just landed?
I thought you knew, sir,
Kerf said, looking a little bewildered.
He said he was on his way to the palace to see you, and I just assumed.
Never mind your assumptions, Major, Deesra snapped. Who is it?
Why, the Admiral, sir. You know, Admiral Pelion.
The waiter at the open-air tapcaf set the plate of mesh-cooked Trimpian slices down on the table, accepted payment with a not-quite sneer, and strolled his way back toward the overhang where the bar was located.
He's a real gem, isn't he?
Lando grumbled, glaring after him.
Probably figures M'Challa's scholars wouldn't know good service if it fell over them, so why bother?
Han said, picking up one of the slices and dipping it into the yellow-swirled miasma sauce, being careful not to let the sleeve of his robe drag into it. Despite the fact that they again had no progress to show for their morning's work, he was actually feeling better than he had earlier. Lando, on the other hand, seemed to have caught his bad mood.
So what? That means our money's no good?
He growled.
I tell you, Han, they're getting cocky again.
Yeah, I know,
Han said, taking a bite as he looked out at the people hurrying along the streets bordering the tapcaf. Hurrying about their business, with a light step and an optimism they probably hadn't had in years. And it didn't take a genius to figure out why. Grand Admiral Thrawn had returned.
They have to realize they're still completely overmatched,
he pointed out around his mouthful.
They've got what? 1,000 systems left?
It's not a lot.
Lando agreed, snagging a piece of the Trimpian for himself and dabbing it delicately into the miasma sauce. Lobot, Han noted, without the distraction of conversation or moodiness to slow him down, was already on his second slice.
But you sure wouldn't know it by looking at him.
Yeah,
Han said, looking around some more. Happy people, cheerful people, confident that the universe was about to open up and rain wonders down on them again. It was enough to turn a bad mood really rotten. He paused, the tangy bite of Trimpian between his teeth suddenly forgotten. Beyond the pedestrians, the vehicular traffic had come to a momentary halt as a speeder truck halfway down the block maneuvered toward a loading ramp. And in one of the land speeders, a few meters back from the tap calf...
Lando, over there,
he hissed, nodding toward the land speeder.
That dark green open-top land speeder. The guy with the thick blonde beard?
Lando pulled back the side of his hood for better visibility.
I'll be a scruffy nerf herder, he breathed. That's not Zaphib, is it?
Sure looks like him,
Han agreed grimly, fighting the impulse to pull his own hood a little tighter around his face. Captain Zaphib, head of the Kavarloo Pirates and one of the nastier forms of semi-intelligent rot scum he'd ever had the misfortune to cross paths with. Considering the bounty on Zothip's head, there shouldn't have been a civilized planet anywhere in the galaxy where he should have been able to show his ugly face. And yet there he was, crammed into a land speeder with five equally ugly bodyguards in the middle of the Imperial capital, shouting obscenities at the speeder truck as if he owned the whole town.
I'd say we found the pirate empire Link Luke and me have been looking for,
he muttered.
Clones and all.
I'd say you're right,
Lando said, his robe twitching as he shivered.
I sure hope you're not gonna suggest we follow him and confirm it.
Han shook his head.
Not a chance, pal. I tangled with him once a long time ago. I haven't the slightest interest in trying it again.
Me neither.
Lando exhaled audibly.
You know something, Han? We're getting old.
Yeah, tell me about it, Han said. Come on, let's eat up and get back to the library.
He glanced up at the brilliant sunlight and blue, cloudless sky.
Suddenly this town seems a lot less friendly than it did 5 minutes ago.
The speeder truck finished its maneuvering. The traffic began to move again, and Solo and the others went back to their meal. And setting a high-denomination coin down beside her own half-finished snack, Caroli left the tap calf and slipped out into the stream of pedestrians. Suddenly, there was something more interesting than Solo and Calrissian and their library research to attract her attention. Something far more interesting. The dark-green Cochrane landspeeder hadn't made it more than a street away when she found what she was looking for. An old beat-up Ubriquian 9000, untended, parked at the side of the street. Palming her Mistral issue insider, she hopped into the driver's seat, taking the control stick with one hand and sliding the insider beneath the readout panel with the other. The motor coughed reluctantly to life, and with a glance over her shoulder, she pulled out into a gap in the vehicular stream. A casual observer would have seen nothing unusual. She could only hope that the owner wouldn't miss his vehicle until she was finished with it. She wove in and out of traffic until she had trimmed enough off Zothip's lead to be able to catch frequent glimpses of the dark green Cochrane. The more official-looking buildings, including what was obviously the local governor's palace, were situated on the higher ground at the northern edge of the city off to their left. If the Imperial connection Solo had mentioned was real, the pirates should be turning off any time now. But to her growing surprise, they didn't. Instead, the Cochrane continued east, angling northward only after the palace was far behind them. They reached the outskirts of the city and headed out into the wooded hills that bordered the area to the north. Karoli found herself dropping farther and farther back as the traffic thinned out. The pirates changed roads twice more, curving farther and farther north, and Karoli began to regret she'd never gotten around to picking up a map of the area. The road they were on seemed to be taking them in a circle around the city, which made no sense to her at all, unless they were trying to come up on the palace from behind. She was still toying with that thought when the Cachran suddenly pulled to the side of the road and disappeared into the trees. She pulled off too, slipping out of her Eubrickian and heading into the woods on foot. She'd gone only a little ways when the sound of the repulsor lifts ahead of her cut off.
"You sure this is it?"
A rough voice drifted back toward her through the trees.
"Doesn't look like any escape route I've ever seen."
"Trust me, Captain,"
a more cultured voice assured him.
"I scoped the place out thoroughly the last time we were here."
Karoli got a glimpse of movement through the trees, headed for the cover of a squat bush.
"Here it is,"
the cultured man said, and as Karoli dropped into a crouching position behind the bush, she saw one of the six pirates reach out an arm and swing away some hanging branches from a tree growing out of the rocky cliff face.
"Your typical Imperial rat run,"
Zothib grunted, ducking down to peer inside.
"Couple of land speeders stashed away in there. The tunnel wide enough for 'em, Control?"
"I presume we'll find out,"
the cultured man said.
"Grinner, get it started."
The pirates disappeared beneath the hanging branches, and a minute later there was the sound of a repulsor lift powering up. The sound revved, then faded away into the distance. Karoli gave them a count of 10, then eased to the tree and ducked under the branches. She found herself in a small room, no more than twice as wide as the tile-walled tunnel that extended into the hills from its rear wall, with a small slipter landspeeder parked along the side. In the distance, she could see the reflected glow from the other landspeeder's lights receding rapidly down the tunnel. Using her inciter, she started up the slipter, hoping the sound of the pirate's own vehicle would cover up the extra noise. Swinging it around, leaving the lights off, she headed off in pursuit.
"Report from Security Team 8, sir,"
the young trooper at the comm monitor said, his voice academy crisp.
"3 possibles have been spotted in a landspeeder outside the Tamaris building. Security Team 2 reporting 2 possibles have just entered a jewelry store on the 14th block of Bleecker Street."
"I've got data feeds from both teams,"
the trooper at one of the computer displays added.
"Running facial matches now."
"He'll be running them against the complete fleet record system over at the Ompersan, Your Excellency,"
the lieutenant standing beside Deesra explained.
"If they've ever crossed paths with the Empire, their faces will be in there."
"Very good, Lieutenant," Deesra said, looking around the darkened palace situation room with a mixture of satisfaction and envy.
Satisfaction because the command team he'd installed here a year ago was working with the kind of speed and efficiency that had once been the proud hallmark of the Imperial military. Envy because it wasn't him they were performing for.
"Any suggestions, Admiral?"
Standing behind the main comm monitor station, Thrawn lifted his eyebrows politely. In the dim lighting, his glowing red eyes looked even brighter than usual.
"I suggest, Your Excellency,"
he said, the word suggest carrying just the barest emphasis,
"that we first allow the analysis staff to do their work. There's nothing to be gained by showing our hand until we're sure who the spies are."
"Maybe they all are,"
Deesra countered, suddenly tired of the polite condescension. In character or not, dangerous or not, it was high time he took the con man down a stroke or two.
"Coruscant has been trying to learn Bastion's current location for a good 2 years now. I doubt they would waste that hard-fought knowledge just to drop one or two spies on us."
He could feel Tirsa's eyes on him, and the heat of the guardsman's disapproval of his verbal challenge. But Thrawn's blue-black eyebrows merely lifted politely.
What do you suggest then, Your Excellency? That a saboteur team has been sent in to bring down our planetary shields in preparation for a major attack?
Deesra stared at him, the sudden jolt momentarily sidetracking his irritation. That was precisely the scheme they themselves were working against the Bothan homeworld of Bothawee. What in the Empire was Flim doing talking openly about such a thing here? He was saved from his sudden confusion by the trooper at the computer console.
Report from Opasan, Admiral, the other announced. Suspected possibles have been cleared. All are listed as Imperial citizens.
Very good, Thrawn acknowledged. Continue the search. Your Excellency, I presume you have not forgotten your appointment?
Deesra looked at his chrono, suppressing a scowl. Yes, Pelion would be arriving at the palace any minute now. And between that time crunch and the confusion his barbed remark about saboteurs had caused, the con man had managed to blunt the Moff's verbal attack without saying anything that could be construed as insubordination. Just the sort of thing the real Thrawn might have done. Deesra supposed he ought to be pleased.
Thank you for the reminder, Admiral, he said. Carry on here, and let me know the minute you find anything.
They had been back at work for half an hour, when Lobot's fingers abruptly came to a halt.
What is it?
Han asked, the smell of Miasra sauce on his breath, wafting by Lando's ear, as Han leaned over his shoulder.
Are we in?
I don't know,
Lando said, frowning at Lobot. The other's face had changed subtly, too, at about the same time his fingers had stopped typing. More importantly, the pattern of tiny lights on the frequency readouts of his cyborg implant had changed.
Something's interrupted his contact with Moki.
Uh-oh,
Han muttered under his breath.
You think they're onto us?
I don't know,
Lando said again, studying Lobot's profile and wondering if he should try talking to him. Lobot's eyes seemed almost glazed over, as if he were in a trance or deep in thought.
I've never seen that comm pattern before.
Han reached out and experimentally touched Lobot's shoulder. There was no response.
Backup frequency, maybe?
Could be, Lando agreed. I didn't know they'd set up a second biocom frequency, but that would make sense. I just wish...
Abruptly, the pattern of tiny lights changed again.
Beware,
Lobot croaked out, his voice an eerie parody of a Verpine's insectine speech.
Security frequencies, very active.
Mogid's talking through him,
Lando said. A tight sensation in the pit of his stomach. As far as he could remember, Lobot and Mogid had never done that before, either.
Mogid? Can you hear me?
There was a long pause, as if some kind of awkward two-way translation was taking place.
I hear,
Lobot said at last.
Beware. Security frequencies. Very active.
They're on to us,
Han said decisively, standing up.
Come on, let's get out of here.
You think that's a good idea?
Lando asked, looking at the slightly blurred scene outside their privacy field.
At least here they have to come right up to us to get a good look at our faces.
Only if they can't find a display unit to plug that droid out there into,
Han said tartly.
Come on, give me a hand with Lobot. He might not be able to steer himself right now. Mogit, is there anyone snooping around the ship?
They had made it halfway to the door, each of them gripping one of Lobot's upper arms, before Mogit's answer came back.
No one,
Lobot assured them in that same verpine croak.
Instructions?
Stay put,
Han told him.
We'll be there as soon as we can. Better cut off your transmission to Lobot, too.
And don't touch anything,
Lando added.
You start up the engines and they'll have you targeted in half a minute.
They might anyway,
Han warned as they continued toward the exit.
two will get you the hand pot. They figured out the record Leia and I gave Carib wasn't taken at Packrick Minor. All they have to do is run the records for any ships that arrived after that drone probe did.
Unless Moog had gotten to the spaceport computer and changed our arrival date, Lando grunted.
Was he gonna do that?
He was gonna try. I don't know if he managed it or not.
The lights on Lobot's implant changed again, and suddenly, like a sleepwalker suddenly coming awake, he straightened up in their grasp, his tread becoming steady and firm.
We'll just have to get back as fast as we can,
Lando said, letting go of Lobot's arm and reaching beneath his cloak to loosen the small, undetectable slug thrower hidden there. Theoretically undetectable, anyway.
And hope we get there before they do.
Ahead, the lights from the pirate's landspeeder stopped bouncing. Karoli took the cue and brought her own vehicle to a quick halt, shutting down the repulsor lifts as soon as it was safe to do so. Just in time. Even as the whine from her own repulsor lifts faded into silence, she could hear the last echoes of sound as the vehicle ahead also powered down. The lights were still pointed forward, away from her. Hopping out of her landspeeder, she headed that direction in a deceptively awkward-looking walk that struck a balance between speed and silence. Not that the silent part was all that necessary. Zothip, in particular, didn't seem at all worried about noise.
Typical Impratron, all right,
his gruff voice boomed, unnaturally loud in the confines of the tunnel.
Where does this turbo lift go? Up into the palace, I presume,
Control replied. He seemed to be at least making an effort to keep his volume down.
I've never actually...
And where does this other part of the tunnel go?
Someone else cut in.
I don't know,
Control said patiently.
As I started to say, I've never actually been in here.
Karoli was close enough to see them now, framed at the edge of the landspeeder's lights.
We'd better find out,
Zothip grunted.
Grinner, call the turbolift and stay here with it when it gets here. The rest of you, let's go for a walk.
The five of them strode off through the illumination of the landspeeder's lights, Zothip in the middle, with the four guards forming a protective box around him. The remaining pirate, Grinner, punched the turbolift call once, then turned back to watch his departing comrades. Karoli had reached the rear of the landspeeder by the time the turbolift car arrived. She dropped down behind the rear quarter, freezing in place with blaster ready, as Grinner turned back around to where he'd be able to see her. But with the lights blazing practically in his face, he didn't have a hope of spotting her back there in the shadows. He glanced once into the car, apparently confirming it was empty, and reached in to push the hold button. Then, satisfied that he'd carried out his orders, he turned back around to watch for Zothip's return. There were, Karoli realized, not a lot of choices open to her at this point, and the ones she had weren't all that palatable. She could settle the Mistral's score with Zothip right here and now, counting on surprise and her Mistral training to make up for her numerical disadvantage. But from what she'd overheard, it seemed there was something very interesting going on between Zothip and someone in the palace above them. Planned assassination, perhaps? Or even a coup? Not that she practically cared what happened to Imperial governors. Or soldiers, or moths for that matter. The whole lot of them could crash and burn as far as the Mistral were concerned. But pirates sneaking into a governor's palace on an Imperial world was just odd enough to have piqued her curiosity. Rising from her crouch, she eased silently up behind Grinner. With his attention down the tunnel, and his mind who knew where, he never heard a thing. Sidling around behind him, watching to make sure she wasn't coming into his peripheral vision, she slipped into the turbolift car. It was, as she'd guessed from the glimpse she'd gotten of its interior, a transplanted military turbolift car, probably scavenged from an old dreadnought. And as was the case with all such turbolifts, the door she'd just entered by was mirrored by another one on the opposite side of the car. It hadn't been used recently. A single glance told her that much.
but by the same token, it also looked like it hadn't been sealed. There was only one way to find out for sure, and the time for that test was now. In the distance, she could hear echoing footsteps, and as she looked back at the doorway, she saw Grinner disappear in that direction as he took a few steps down the tunnel toward the returning pirates. It was the work of 5 seconds to pull her climbing claws from her hip pouch, open them, fasten them securely to her hands, and ease their points into the crack between the closed doors. Setting her teeth, she began to pull them apart. For a moment, nothing happened. She pulled harder, putting mistral-honed muscle behind it. And with a suddenness that startled her, they came apart, sliding smoothly and almost noiselessly into the walls of the car. Unlike the car itself, the turbolift shaft behind the doors hadn't been transplanted from anywhere. It had been carved out of solid rock, with only a light gridwork frame installed to support the repulsor lift and tractor equipment that powered the system. The clearance between the gridwork and the car was minimal, but adequate. Stepping through the door, turning again to face into the car, she found a toehold on the doorframe lip and got a grip on the doors. She had them pulled back down to a slight crack when Zothip rounded the corner and stomped into the car. She froze, abandoning the rest of her effort, her eyes searching the outside of the car now. If Grinner noticed the doors were cracked more than they had been earlier, there was going to be trouble. But Grinner hadn't struck her as the observant type, and there was nothing she could do about it now anyway. More important was the fact that if she didn't find a way to hang on, she was going to be left behind. There were no convenient handholds that she could get to, which meant she was going to have to make some. Timing it to the exact moment when one of the pirates stomped into the car, she jammed her climbing hooks into the grillwork behind two of the glow panels. She'd barely gotten them set when there was the vibration of the main doors closing, and they were off.
"So what was at the other end of the tunnel?"
she heard Grinner's voice ask through the crack between the doors. She'd expected the response to come from Zothip, but it was Control's voice that answered.
"Looked like some sort of apartment," he said. "Rather nicely appointed."
"Anyone in it?" Grinner asked.
"Not at the moment," Control said. "But whoever was living there liked having his own personal Star Destroyer captain's chair."
"His own what?" Grinner growled. "What in Vader's face would anyone want with something like that?"
"Very good," Control said archly. "You've got the question. Now if we had the answer, we'd have a complete set."
"I don't like this," Zothip rumbled. "I don't like any of it. He's playing something real close to the chest, and I don't like it."
"Whatever it is, we'll find out soon enough," Control assured him. "We might want to go in a little quieter than you'd planned, though."
"Oh, we'll go in quiet, all right," Zothip promised darkly. "Don't worry about that. He'll never hear a thing."
Chapter 21. They had made it 5 blocks, which was 4 blocks farther than Han had thought they would get, when the whole thing started to unravel.
"Han?"
Lando murmured, as the three of them hurried across a busy street with a crowd of other pedestrians.
"That security land speeder there to the left just slowed down."
"I know,"
Han said grimly, peering around the edge of his scholar's hood. Near as he could tell through the curved windows, there were 2 men in the vehicle. Alert young men by the looks of them, undoubtedly armed to the teeth.
"That's what, the 3rd one that's taken an interest in us?"
"About that," Lando sighed.
"Where's Luke and his Jedi tricks when you need them?"
"Luke or Leia,"
Han added, wishing mightily now that he hadn't argued so successfully against her coming on this trip. They might well have been spotted a lot sooner, but at least when they were, they would have had a Jedi here on their side.
"He's turning back around. They're on us, all right."
"Well, don't give up just yet,"
Lando said, glancing around.
You still have official standing with the New Republic. We may be able to talk.